Test, test, check, check, check. Welcome in, welcome in, welcome to another episode of Eliminate the Gray with Off the Record D. Thank you all for being here on this Saturday morning. This is a victory Saturday. So the Browns played the Carolina Panthers last night in their first preseason game. Shedeur Sanders got the start. Let me do my sound check here, making sure I'm sounding good. Give me just a second. All right, good. We are good. We are good. So last night was very exciting for Shedeur Sanders fans. It was very, very exciting for Cleveland Browns fans. Last night was just all around win. We're going to get to some of the things we heard pregame. So some of the stuff we heard pregame. Shedeur can't call a play. Shedeur can't lead the huddle. Shedeur can't get the guys lined up. We're going to see if any of that played out in the game. We're going to see if he was able to handle going against the Carolina Panthers 1s, playing with the Cleveland Brown 2s. We're going to go over how his overall game went. We're going to break that down. We're going to look at some things that I said in yesterday's show of what I wanted to see. I said I wanted to see how Shedeur did. I was very confident in Shedeur, but I also wanted to see how the young guys did. Gage, number 84. Gage Labberden, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. He is a player, man. He had a great punt return. He actually is the one who saved Shedeur Sanders from throwing that interception because he did a great job of turning into a DB and breaking up that pass attempt that could have been an interception. He also took the jet sweep for the touchdown, and he made some great catches. So I think he definitely shined there. Luke Floria, who we know was Shedeur Sanders' go-to in camp. Shedeur got him the ball. He had a great throw where Shedeur rolled the pocket to the right, and he threw it as he was rolling right, threw it over the shoulder. Luke Floria caught it one-handed going to the sideline, getting both feet in. So we saw that. That was a great play by them. Probably that was the play of the game, I would say, when it comes to highlights. Then, or actually it's up there with the play of the game. Because Shedeur made that great throw. Luke made that great catch. Then also the first touchdown to Gabe Davis. I don't know if his name is Gabe Davis. I know it's Davis, number 89. But Shedeur made a great throw, rolling to his left and getting in between two defenders for the first touchdown. He made a great throw for the second touchdown to Davis. So we're going to get into all things the recap of the Cleveland Browns going against the Carolina Panthers. So I think we got a great show lined up for us. It's always going to be a great show when you are coming to do a show after a win, after a victory. So we had a lot of people who were saying things like, Shedeur isn't ready. The Browns are bringing him along slow. And I noticed something. I noticed something starting to happen. It was about Thursday night going into Friday. You notice Tony Grossi, I have this good feeling. I really have this good feeling. No, you've been hating on Shedeur all this time. Now you're faced with the truth. You know what he actually can do. Then Mary Kay, well, I think the Browns bringing him along slowly is, you know, setting him up to be in a good spot. Nah, we're not letting y'all get away with that. We're not letting y'all do that. Because if you look at Shador looked no different playing in that game last night than he looked if you watch any of his games playing in Colorado. He started off kind of slow, and I would say that was a combination of the moment between him and the receivers. Deontay, on that first drive, Deontay Johnson dropped the pass. He caught him on a slant. It went through both of his hands. Deontay Johnson, he's a vet. He has to catch that. Then after that, he threw it to the backup tight end. The backup tight end bobbled it and got 4 yards on a 3rd and 5, which if he doesn't bobble it, all he has to do is fall back, use his momentum. He probably can get that first down. So that was the first drive, 3 and out. After a good 5-yard run on the first down, I believe it was by Dylan Sampson. So I'm just going based off memory of, you know, me being at the game, watching the game. So the first two drives, they didn't really amount to what we would like to see. But, you know, there was just some nerves, I would say, for Shador, nerves for the guys playing. Because what people forget is all the attention is on Shador, but people forget that Shador's on a rookie deal. Based on the Brown salary cap situation, he's going to be on the team. Some of these guys he's throwing the ball to, they might not be on the team. So they have a certain level of pressure on themselves. We saw Luke Floria towards the end of the game not be able to go back in, and he just wasn't hydrated properly. And he's like, you know, he just has to do better with hydrating. And that's something he has to work on. So these guys are people only act. They only think about Shador, but they don't realize the guys he's playing with, they have stuff on the line too. So all in all, it was a great game. I went to the game. Just to give y'all a little backstory, when the Browns drafted Shador, and it was kind of word getting out that the Browns might play their first preseason game in Carolina, I was like, man, I can get to that game. So I got my tickets in probably May. So I've been waiting for this time. So I was assuming that going into this game a couple weeks ago, I'm probably going to get to see Shador for a quarter. That's what I'm thinking. As things play out, we get to see Shador for around 3.5 quarters of play time. I got everything I wanted and more from the game, the energy. So I got there early. You got to see the energy. As Shador is warming up and he's walking around, I was pretty close to the field. I was in the fourth row on the sideline, so on the Brown side. So I'm really close to the field. I can see the players. I can see, you know, as the crowd is coming in and just the energy shift that Shador is moving around. And he's walking around. People calling his name. So you got to see that. You saw how many Browns fans were actually there at the game. So that was a positive. Then you got to see the Carolina Panthers fans who are they're rooting for the team, which is that's cool. You're doing the same thing I'm doing. Nobody's mad at you. You saw Carolina Panthers fans in the beginning. That first drive, we went 3 and out. They were talking, oh man, Shador is not this, Shador is not that. That second drive, we went 3 and out. They still talking. They laughing. But as the Browns put together that it was going, I believe it was going into the second quarter where they were where we were sitting, we were right by the touchdown to see the end that they were on. And then it ended in first quarter ended. They went to the second quarter. They went to the other end. We scored that touchdown, that pass by Shador. They started to get quiet. We scored again after we got the, I think it was a kickoff or a punt penalty. I think it was a punt. After we got the punt and they forced fumble, they were really quiet. It got to the point, they never spoke again. They never spoke again. So they were talking early. They were saying everything with their chest. But the Browns, they showed out, and the Browns put all that noise to bed. They didn't talk anymore. It was one Carolina Panthers fan. He was standing there. He was sticking around to the end. He was hyped, but he had to let it go because, you know, the team wasn't producing. So all in all, I think it was a great experience. If you ever get a chance to go to a live NFL game, it's definitely worth it. Preseason or regular season, I try to get to a couple games a year, especially when, you know, it's kind of local to me. Within like 5 hours or so, I try to get to a Browns game because, you know, I'm ride or die. I'm Cleveland all the way. So that's just wanted to tell y'all, just wanted to bring y'all into the sidelines of what I saw. Also, I wanted to get to the game early. I wanted to see the teams warm up. I wanted to see, is Dylan Gabriel really that small? And Dylan Gabriel is really that small. So as the guys are warming up, Dylan Gabriel didn't really get on the field. He didn't come on the field that much pregame until basically the whole team got out there. That's when he came on the field. I believe he walked in with, I want to say it was Jack Conklin. Hey, Raul, you'll take it. You'll take it. Is 130 yards better than zero? You got to ask yourself. Gabriel's walking in. I believe he's walking in with Jack Conklin. I actually got some pictures of it. I should have connected my phone so I could show y'all. Gabriel's really that small. He's really that small. He's really that short. Even my girl was like, I think I'm taller than him. And that's going to be a problem. That's going to be a problem. Another thing, got some pictures of Joe Flacco. You actually see Joe Flacco's height. You see Bryce Young is pretty short, too. You can see that. He came and signed some stuff right where we were sitting pregame. So you see he's pretty short, too. But I would say Bryce Young is he's a little bit heavier than Dylan Gabriel. He definitely has more weight to him than Dylan Gabriel, I would say, just from first glance and seeing it, seeing those guys kind of closer. Also, you saw Jimmy Haslam walking around. The same face Jimmy Haslam had. I remember I was breaking down a video of him in the draft, and he was looking at his phone, and he was scrolling. He has that same face in person. I tried to get some pictures of it, but he was just turning his back. This man was in a stadium talking on speakerphone. He's just doing old man stuff. It was funny. Got to see Andrew Berry. He was there looking like a kid on the first day of school. He got the book bag on. I was like, man, what's going on? You got to see Kevin Stefanski. You got to see Jim Swartz. So you got to see everybody. So it was just a great, great experience. I went to the last Browns game I went to in Cleveland was when DTR had, they told DTR he's going to start when Deshaun couldn't go versus the Baltimore Ravens. And I had really good seats. I think I was sitting maybe about six rows from the field, and just having that experience, I was like, I can't go to games and sit far back again, because this is a totally different experience when you sit up close and you sit up front. So just all around, I thought it was a great, great night. Great night. We stuck around after the game and we, you know, got to see some up close, get some up close pictures, videos of the players and stuff, talking to people. So it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. So definitely all around up. I'll take it. All right, so now we know what Shador did. It's a couple people that I would say their performance is going to be highly criticized based on what Shador did. So just to set the stage for this next thing, I want to show y'all what Albert Breer was saying. This is what he was saying prior to the Browns preseason game, and this is why the Browns were taking it slow with Shador. This is why Shador wasn't getting first team reps and all that stuff. I'm just going to call it a flat out lie. This is the lie they tried to tell us. So let's get to Albert Breer. I just want to make sure y'all remember how they was talking on Shador before the game, because we know come Monday, they're going to give the Browns credit. They're going to say, oh, well, Shador made the most of it. But we're not going to let y'all just change the page from what y'all was saying prior to the game. I told y'all, I'm keeping them CVS level receipts. I'm keeping them long receipts. Them receipts where you just sitting there waiting. You like, dang, my receipt not ready? The receipt just still coming. You like, man, this register ain't going to stop. That's me. I'm keeping those receipts. And it's for a reason, because I know that I have a responsibility to believe what I'm saying when I get up here and I speak to y'all. And we're going to hold these people accountable who have their responsibility, but they just parrot narratives. So here we go. This is Albert Breer.
But I think part of it, like his ability to operate the offense, is part of what he needs. He needs to take that to a higher level to get first team reps. Because if you're a football team looking, and this is the simplest thing in the world, if you're a football team looking to get ready for the season, and you got veteran players, again, like your Joel Batonios or your Jerry Judy's in that huddle, mm-hmm. that are trying to prepare for a season, you can't fiddle around with a young quarterback who can't operate the offense.
What are you saying, calling the plays in the huddle?
Yeah, stuff like that. The operational stuff is the stuff he was behind on that he had to catch up on.
Right.
And so, look, by all accounts, he's worked really hard at that, but there was a lot of ground for him to make up. You know, and Dylan Gabriel, because he started at three different colleges, right. was in college for 6 years at Oregon and UCF and Oklahoma, was just way ahead of him. When they came in, which is why Gabriel's gotten the first team.
So I got a couple takeaways based on what Albert Breer just said. So he said Shador couldn't do the operational things. He couldn't get the guys in the huddle. He couldn't break the huddle. Couldn't call the play. Okay. Now, this is before. This is when they were able to just say these things, and we didn't have a receipt to pull because it wasn't no game footage. Now, one thing I was watching very closely as I was at the game, I'm watching Kevin Stefanski call in the play, and I'm watching to see how long it takes Shador to break the huddle. I don't remember more than maybe two times Shador broke the huddle with less than 16 seconds on the play clock. Remember, the play clock started at 9. Once you can officially start, 25. Starts at 25. Most cases, he was breaking that huddle at 17 seconds. To me, that tells me it's not the operational issues like they're trying to tell us. And also, I saw Shador rolling his hand, telling Kevin Stefanski, get the play in, get the play in, get the play in. So that means he's waiting for the play. That doesn't mean he can't relate the play to the players. And now you say, okay, if what Albert Breer is saying is true, we would have saw them rushing to the line, which we did not see a lot of. We would have saw guys running the wrong routes. We would have saw him not on the same page with the receivers. Did y'all see that? Y'all watched the game. I watched the game. Did y'all see that? Everybody watched the game. Did y'all see him being missing throws to receivers because they were not on the same page? Only one time he missed a throw, and it was a tight end. I believe his number is 87. He had on these bright orange. It was crazy. Some bright orange cleats. It looked like it was an option route. I might not be calling it the right thing, but it looked like he could have just went in for like a curl, or he could have went to out route, and he curled and set where two defenders were, and Shador expected him to keep it as an out route because he would have been running away from the defense instead of kind of sitting in the middle of the defense. That's the only time Shador threw a pass where he was thinking one thing, receiver was thinking the other thing. Just off the top of my head, that's the one time I can remember where I'm like, man, they weren't on the same page, and it looked like the tight end stopped and sat in the defense instead of getting away from the defense. So that's the only time. So they're telling us this stuff before we can see it with our own eyes. This is the reason why we got the QB tracker. Nobody want to talk about why we got the QB tracker. We got the QB tracker because Tony Grossi and Mary Kay kept telling us Dylan Gabriel was way better than Shador. And then the Browns put out videos of Dylan Gabriel throwing pick sixes. That's why we got the tracker, because the credibility is not there. It's not there. So now Albert Breer, he just gave us a list of things that we were looking for. This is what everybody said. If you look at any show, everybody said, man, the baseline is we want to see Shador, how he can run the offense, how he can get the guys to the line of scrimmage, how he can get them lined up, how he can call out reads, how he can identify the protection. I was watching for it. He was identifying the Mike linebacker. He was calling them out. He was getting them in the right protections. He was doing it. I wasn't going to just go jump out the window and say it was a lie, because I knew it was going down the line where the stuff they were saying about Shador, I was like, y'all know my rule. If they're saying things that aren't quantifiable, I'm calling it a lie off rip. So I was real close to just coming out here saying they are lying on Shador. That's what I was close to coming out here saying. Now we see they were lying. I never called it a lie, but I was close to it. He didn't struggle. He didn't struggle with getting guys lined up. He didn't struggle with calling plays. All that is not true. Now let's go to the second part of what Albert Breer said. This is the problem that they are doing. So they're trying to justify slowing down the reps and how they got Shador fourth on the depth chart. They're trying to slow that down. In the midst of slowing that down, they are building up Dylan Gabriel. What is the problem with building up Dylan Gabriel? You were adding additional pressure to him. So now, since Shador got to play first, and we know he's not taking first-team reps, the issue with the first-team reps is I don't care if he gets to throw to Jerry Jeudy or David Njoku. The thing I care about is I want Shador to be able to go against the first team defense so he can get up to speed on how fast he has to do things. That's what I care about more. From what we all know, he only got 3 reps against the first team defense because that's what's going to prepare him. When you are the starting quarterback and you are the first team offense, you're getting prepared based on how good that first team defense is, and they're giving you that clock, how much time you have to be back there, when you know you got to get rid of the ball. That's the things that would help him move along. So he's not getting that, but Dylan Gabriel is getting that. So now when Dylan Gabriel goes out there, Dylan Gabriel has to outperform Shador. And Dylan Gabriel has been getting all those first team reps. He's getting the 7-7 on reps in practice, even though he's injured and didn't dress to play and had no chance of playing. He's still getting 7-7 reps. So they're not going to be able to use the excuse and say, oh, he's so far behind, because he's still getting more 7-on-7 reps in practice than Shador. So they're setting Dylan Gabriel up to take the biggest L out of this whole situation. Because there's already people who believe Dylan Gabriel didn't have the upside of Shador. But how the Browns have handled this, with every turn we heard, Dylan Gabriel's a supercomputer. Dylan Gabriel played at all these colleges. He played at 3 colleges. He played for all these different offensive coordinators. He thrown the most touchdown passes. Yeah, he played 17 years in college. Come on now. I said this probably 2 weeks ago. I said, did anybody ever question if Dylan Gabriel was so good at every college he was at, how come he had to go to 3 different colleges? Did anybody ever question how come he couldn't beat the person that the college brought in to compete against him? He would just leave. Nobody questioned that, but okay. They just took it as a positive, which you can find a negative there too. So Dylan Gabriel is under so much pressure when he comes in. Now that Shador got that tape out there, they can't lie to us anymore. They can't say Shador he not getting the guys lined up. He don't know what he's doing. That's going to be false. It's going to be false. So they're setting the boy up. I think it's going to be bad for him. They are also setting up Kenny Pickett, because when Kenny Pickett gets out there, if he gets out there from the hamstring, he has to outperform what Shador did. They have to move the offense. They have to have sustained drives. And now we actually have a bar. So Shador set the bar. And if Shador was behind in all these things that they're saying he's behind in, now when these other guys who have been better set up to succeed, they gotta outperform him. They gotta outperform him. So this is, when I wrapped up my show yesterday, I said that it wasn't the Browns sabotaging Shador, it's their incompetence. And the reason why I said incompetence was because to sabotage somebody, you got to know what's going on. And I don't think they know what's going on. I think they're stumbling into wins, like with Shador looking better. I don't think they are. Nobody would say that the Browns are the smartest organization. So then how can we say that they're smart enough to do certain things, which we know they're not? I think they're stumbling into situations, and also they're stumbling into good situations with Shador, and they're stumbling into bad situations with everybody else, because they wanted us to believe Kenny Pickett was the best quarterback on the roster. That's not showing. He's already injured. We can't even see him. They want us to believe Dylan Gabriel is this supercomputer. They want us to believe his processing speed is so good. They want us to believe all these things. But the thing with football is, none of what I say about a player matters. It matters what that player does on the field. That's what matters the most. Shador answered the questions. Shador showed that, hey, they saying this stuff, but I just got to go out there and work. Then after the game, it was very key. He was being interviewed. I want to say he was being interviewed by NFL Network. His NFL Network interview on the field, they asked him, how you grade yourself? He said, oh, I give myself a C+. Some things I could do better. Overall, we got the win. And I think that's a fair grade of itself. So he's not out there riding high. He's staying even keel, which I think is really good. We're going to see the Browns implode on the big stage. And I'm happy that there's so many new fans here, because new fans who are not just okay with losing, who are not okay with stuff just going bad, they're going to call out more. So if you are a Cleveland Browns fan, for a long time, a lot of times you're in the minority of giving somebody else a shot. What Browns fans usually hold on to is somebody who performed previously, and they act like that their person's going to come in and give them that exact thing. That's why Browns fans believe in Joe Flacco so much, the clamoring for Joe Flacco, instead of finding somebody new. Hey, Nate, you see it? Nate, you see it? Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, so this is for the podcast, people. I'm going to read this to y'all because Nate is really hitting something. Dylan averaged 23 touchdowns per year in 6 years. Shador averaged 33 touchdowns in 4 years. They actually believe it's a flex, but the math ain't there. That is so true. That is so true. Saying a player had to stay in college longer is not a plus. And they're so busy trying to set a narrative based on Shador that they are making stuff look better. They're making Shador look better when they say stuff about Gabriel. Only two games left. Cleveland has to expose their hand in the next 2 weeks on who the starter will be. The Slicksters are running out of time. Good old boy conversations just got blown up. Shador really, he put a monkey wrench in everything they wanted to do. This is what they wanted to do. This is just, I'm going to speculate. I always tell y'all when I'm starting to speculate. I'm going to speculate on this. I think the Browns wanted to hold Shador at the forefront of the depth chart, put that out in the media. I believe they wanted to put out in the media that he was behind everybody, and I believe they wanted to really not give him a shot so they could always just push the Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, Dylan Gabriel situation and not really give him a shot this year if it would have been up to them. But the problem in football is it's not really always up to you. Sometimes stuff happens in football that you can't control, like injuries. When injuries happen, you gotta go next man up. And they made this whole plan, and it was based on, it was almost nothing Shador could do to get this much game film out there in the preseason. See, I think the Browns should have just said, hey, Joe Flacco's the starter. Stop trying to get a film out there on Kenny Pickett so they can go and try to trade him and all this stuff. To me, the Browns coming off a 3-win season, you're not good enough to try to do all these extra things with stashing quarterbacks and trading quarterbacks and holding them for leverage. You're not good enough to do that. If you won 3 games, your only focus is to win more games. You can't be out here doing side quests. You can't be out here doing extra stuff trying to, you know, get extra credit on stuff when you got to put a good product on the field. So the Kenny Pickett thing, I never understood it. More things have come out that Andrew Berry really liked Kenny Pickett from the beginning. So that's probably why we were hearing so much if Kenny Pickett could be a starter. I just don't see it. I don't believe in it. Never saw it. I always felt that you should go younger. Now Joe Flacco is going to be penciled in because everybody's going to say he got the experience. But Joe Flacco, man, this is no diss to Joe Flacco, but everybody know a 40-year-old quarterback not named Tom Brady is not going to make it through 17 games. And then we got a rough schedule, and it's not like we got the best roster, and it's not like we got the number one defense in the NFL. So other guys are going to play. The Browns play about 4 QBs a year on average for the last since Kevin Stefanski been here. So we're going to play multiple QBs. The problem that the Browns are going to run into is Shador put himself in position where he should be the backup behind Joe Flacco with his performance. And now the other guys have to outperform him in the public eye so they can erase a lot of the backlash they're going to face. And I don't think the other two guys are going to be able to do it. Because me, I watched Kenny Pickett, and I saw Aditi, she was covering the game last night. Aditi always said, oh, man, he was just in a bad position, and they made all these excuses for Kenny Pickett. Oh, he might have had the worst offensive coordinator. Okay, when you grade a player that didn't perform on the Browns, do you give him those same passes that everybody want to get at Kenny Pickett? What happened? As soon as they signed Russell Wilson, Kenny Pickett said he wanted to trade out of there. I don't like those things where you're not even willing to compete. At least one can't compete versus another guy that they bring in. Because then what happened? Russell ended up getting hurt, so he would have been the starter the first 6 games or so. So I don't see it with Kenny Pickett. I know some people were saying he's injury-prone, and you see how fast he ended up being injured. So I just don't see it. I don't see it. I don't see it with Dylan Gabriel. All the people who are Shedeur Sanders fans who felt like he was going to ball out, he went and showed out enough to silence all the stuff that we heard previously. That's enough of me kind of rambling on about that. Let's get to a little bit of Kevin Stefanski's reaction to how Shedeur played. So let's get this clip going here. Let's get this up here.
Again, not perfect. Plenty that we can work on. But I thought the guys did a really nice job of Shedeur and operating, the guys making plays. So, again, a ton to teach off of. Yeah, that's the exciting part, Kelsey, for us as coaches and their teammates to see those guys perform under the lights and, you know, make plays. We see them making plays in practice, see if they can do it in these games. And that will be continue to be part of this preseason.
And what does this game do to your quarterback competition?
Yeah, we're really just focused on developing our players. We're in evaluation mode. I'm pleased with where the guys are, but I'm not diving into a quarterback competition.
That's going to be an L, coach. That's going to be an L. The reason why that's going to be an L is because y'all told us, not y'all specifically, but the Cleveland Browns are the ones. Let me break this down so y'all get it. Let me start so I'm not jumping ahead of my brain when I'm saying this to y'all. When you see the national media who don't cover the Browns on a day-to-day basis all come out and say the same story, Shedeur got to work on processes. Shedeur got to work on classroom stuff. Shedeur got to work on calling plays, getting guys out of the huddle, his cadence and all that stuff. That's coming from the Browns. Albert Breer is not. Albert Breer is on a training camp tour, and he's saying no specific details about the Browns. Remember, we saw it was a writer for, I think, Yahoo Sports. It was a lady. I did a video on her. She was saying, oh, yeah, Shedeur just, you know, he kind of behind in the classroom stuff. She was saying Dylan Gabriel's further ahead. That's the Browns putting those narratives out. So now, when you created this problem, the Browns created this problem. That's why if the Browns would have came out and said, Joe Flacco is a starter, he could eliminate all these questions he's going to get about this QB competition. When they're lying, saying this is an open competition and it's really not an open competition, they are creating the questions that people are going to ask them after every practice, after every performance. Now, what's going to happen next week when they go to Philly and they have the joint practices? What questions are they going to get? How does this impact the quarterback competition when they play in the game? Because y'all know what's going to happen. Game two, they're going to want to get probably Kenny Pickett some tape, and they're going to want to get Gabriel some tape, and they'll probably give Shedeur the fourth quarter of the game versus Philly. When they do that, they're going to get more questions about this. So they thought that there were these mad scientists, you know, man, we're going to say it's a QB competition. It's open to everybody, but we really know who we want to, you know, be the starter. We really know who we want to be the backup. We're going to try to prompt Dylan Gabriel up. It's blowing up in their face. They are creating these problems. That's why I say it's not sabotage, it's incompetence. This is blowing up in their faces. He asked him about the quarterback competition. He's talking about developing guys. We're trying to develop everybody. Huntley's not going to be here. Deshaun Watson's not going to play this year. So you talking about developing Joe Flacco? You talking about developing Kenny Pickett? He is backing himself into a corner and making it harder for himself. I said this a couple weeks ago. People disagree with me. I said Kevin Stefanski is making this harder. When you want to stack wins and you want to stack getting better every single day, I talked about the book I read and how you add in something small every day to constantly and consistently get better at something. What he's doing is he's putting the monkey wrench in how easy it can be because they want to play the smartest in the room. I never really called them the smartest in the room with how they did things and how they made decisions. But last year, following the Browns really closely, more as a podcaster, and then following this year the draft and following everything and actually posting it and making videos about it and digging into it deeper, I see that they play that smartest in the room role a lot, and that is one of the things that sabotages them. They're sabotaging. I mean, they're sabotaging their decisions, and it's showing their incompetence. That's what I want to say. So, let's see. We don't need anything else from Kevin Stefanski. That's gonna be an L, Coach. I'm sorry. We're gonna get to what Shador says. This is gonna be his post game, and then also like, comment, subscribe. I went to the game last night, but I'll be having listening parties for the next two games. So next week, Saturday, the Browns versus Philadelphia, I'll be having a listening party on YouTube, so definitely tap in. If you want to be somewhere with other Browns fans watching the game, other Shador fans watching the game, that's where we'll be. We'll be on Off the Record D. Remember, the is THA, so I will be live for those games. Then going into the regular season, we're going to do listening parties for the whole season. The whole season, all the games. We're going to do listening parties. I can't play the video on YouTube, but we definitely going to listen to it and just take in the games together. So if you want to watch the game on your TV, have YouTube up on your phone, and just be commenting and talking to people about how the game is going, definitely tap in all throughout the season. So let's get a little bit to Shador here.
What changed? I would say just the energy. The energy around, I would say well, since I've been around, you know, the energy around like the Browns, you know, I just feel like overall, it was a different spark. You know, I feel like it was a spark, even though it's a preseason game. Typically, people don't take those too much serious, but like that's our Super Bowl. You know, that's each and every player's Super Bowl. So the change is a family thing. You know, it's a family. You got to be able to go to war with each and every guy and understand like. We're not playing for ourselves here. We're playing for each other, you know. So not making selfish mistakes, not doing that type of stuff, getting through reads, handing the ball off, doing what you got to do. Everybody do their job, and that's how we believe in one another.
Hey, Shador, the fact that you played so many plays into the fourth quarter versus the way it's gone in camp with the reps being split, mm-hmm. How does that help your comfort level just in flowing with the game?
Well, I say I'm comfortable with being uncomfortable, you know, so that's what it is. You know, I got pockets of finding my rhythm, and I got to get into that quicker, regardless of anything. But overall, I feel like me out there, you know, and I couldn't do it, of course, without the time. I couldn't do it without the play calling. I couldn't do it without anything. So I'm just thankful to even be able to have, you know, the joy of just being on the field overall, then carrying the responsibility of doing the right thing, you know. So that's two badges under my belt already, you know, that I got out there. I feel like we operated the huddle really, really good. So it's just the small details that of course we practice on and we talk about. And I'll say, of course, towards the end, I'll say we got a little sloppy, and we overall gonna finish it up, and that's gonna be a point of emphasis going into this next week. But you know, I was just thankful just to share that moment with everybody.
Like I said, it's a win-win. When he talks about the energy, just being in the stadium, being there, listening to how the fans were cheering and there to support the Browns, it's definitely a different energy. Me being a Browns fan, I've been a Browns fan a long time. I went to see the Browns play in different places. I saw the Browns play in Atlanta a couple seasons ago. I saw the Browns play when we had Terrell Pryor in Miami. Where else have I been? Like on the road. I saw the Browns play the Panthers in the season opener two seasons ago? Maybe three. I don't know. When Kate York hit that long kick at the end. And all of those were regular season games. This was a preseason game. The way people showed up, the way Browns fans showed up, the way Shador fans showed up, it was just something else. It was a sight to see for sure. One thing I will say that what people are not thinking about. So people are not thinking about Shador is bringing people to the Cleveland Browns who are not football fans. And I think that dynamic is just missing when people look at how much of a star Shador is. So as people in the stands, they were clear. They were there for Shador, and they are not overall NFL fans. They're not going to sit on Sundays and watch all these games They're going to wait till Shador's playing, and that's when they're going to tune in. And it's almost like they're not accounted for when people talk about, you know, Shador's stardom. Somebody sat next to us, and she got there a little bit late, and she was asking us, like, the score and stuff like that. And she traveled. She traveled from Florida. She traveled from Florida to come to be able to see Shador and Jimmy Horn play together in the same game. Those are the fans that they're kind of not accounting for. And if you are a YouTuber, if you make TikToks, you see it. You see it in real time, especially covering the Browns. You know where your views went and where your views are now. You know where your reach is, where it was and where it is now. You see your demographics of who's watching. You see all those things. So that's the thing that for some reason nobody is accounting for. And I'm like, this is going to be something like y'all never seen. And you have Cleveland media saying, oh, we had Baker, they had the Baker Bros, and we had Johnny Manziel. The thing with those guys was, yeah, they had a following, but those guys their following was rooted in football. Shador's following is rooted in people watching him grow up in front of their eyes, watching him, you know, come from a boy to a man, watching him go from Jackson State to the Browns. You know, so it's a big. They've been following him for years. So that's the unaccounted for group of people who are following this thing, and they're making their presence felt. Definitely made it. I was sitting next to, it was not right next to us, but it was a lady. She was probably one row back and across the rail over to the left. Every time Shador took the field, she said, "Let's go 12," and she was yelling it. Like, loud. And I'm like, that's the fan that is being brought into the NFL that the NFL can't even recognize. To me, I think they should tap into those fans more. But, you know, we'll see as time goes on. We'll see. Let's get back to Shador. Let's see what else he has to say.
I'm going to be honest. I wasn't nervous, so I didn't really have too much adrenaline. It was just getting comfortable. That's all it is. Like, it's plenty of games before, like, I was nervous, but I felt like I knew the answers to the test. So it's like, when you feel unprepared, then, you know, when you don't feel like you're ready for the moment, I know I'm ready for the moment. Did I play up to par? No, I don't feel like I did. But overall, the main goal was to win, and that's honestly what we did.
That just made me think about something as I was here. So it's certain things that you don't get. They don't show on a TV coverage of a game. And do y'all remember it was pre and post draft. They said Shador didn't have a strong arm and he couldn't throw and all these things. So leading into before they go back in, when they warm up, before they go back inside and then they run out of the tunnel, before they did that, Shador was doing this throwing thing with a couple receivers. Excuse me. Where he started at one touchdown, and he was throwing 40 and 50-yard passes with ease. Definitely the prime effect. I agree with that. It's to see you aunties, to see you uncles, to see you granddads, to see you grandmas, to see you nephews and nieces. They are there. The prime effect is real. He's always tapped into that. And that's why I think instead of fighting it, I think they should tap into it for sure. So he was doing this passing thing, like a passing drill, getting ready. And every pass he's throwing, just on the money, all of them 40 yards in the air. And he started at one touchdown and went all the way to throwing like shoulder, over the shoulder, like corner passes to the receivers in the touchdown. I was like, man, they tried to tell us that he didn't have an arm. I'm just watching this, and I'm watching him throw the ball, and I'm like, who actually – and there were spirals. There were tight spirals. And I was like, who believed he didn't have an arm? Just think if you were one of the teams that believed a lot of the noise you heard about Shador, and then you see him doing this in pregame, and you're like, why do we think he didn't have an arm? Because he got an arm, and we saw it. And his accuracy is there. That's the reason why I thought he would be a great fit for Kevin Stefanski's offense because it's a timing and rhythm-based offense, and he's a timing and rhythm-based quarterback, and he is showing that the accuracy is there. Everybody see it. Everybody see it. They can't deny it. Remember also they said he couldn't move. He was a statue quarterback, and I know he had the one scramble that was crazy on third down where he was trying to make something happen, but he had guys missing. They was falling all over the field trying to catch him. He also had the pretty good run for a first down. I want to say it was on third down. All this stuff they was telling us is just not true. Shout out to you, Selmo. For sure, the dog pond is here. All the lies they made up about him just not true. They said he had a weak arm. That's not true. They said he couldn't move. You saw the scrambles. You saw him moving around. He did have about two or three plays where he did kind of drift back. But those defenders were on him so fast, I think it was just his reaction was like, dang, let me just try to shake him and run back. But they was there too fast. I saw him do that twice. He got to clean that up. But I saw him more so stand in the pocket, use his footwork, shift the pocket so he can make throws downfield, especially once he got comfortable. Once he got comfortable and he got in that groove, he was like, okay, this is the quarterback that everybody thought we were getting when we drafted Shador. So I thought that was really good. How do y'all think he did? Let me know in the comments. I'm reading y'all comments as I go through this. Let me know how y'all think he did. Did he perform the way you thought he would perform? Did he perform better than you thought he would perform? Or did he perform worse than you thought he would perform? So let me know. Definitely, that's it. Nate, that's so true. In the stadium, everybody was saying, oh, he did all that, but he didn't get the first down. And I was like, do you realize they said that he couldn't move? even that first down run that he did on third down where he ran and slid and he put the wrist up, like, that was – they weren't expecting him to have that speed. They were not expecting it. And I don't think he's going to be out here winning, 40 races, but when it comes to him getting away from D linemen, he can get away from some D linemen and, get a 7 or a 10-yard run when everybody's in man coverage and everybody's back is to you and nobody's accounting for the quarterback. So, I mean, we saw him do that yesterday. So, we definitely saw that. Let's see. We saw the numbers. I don't got to break down the numbers. So, in my normal post game, I, break down the numbers and I go through things. The only numbers I want to talk about is the Browns pre-snap and post-snap penalties. That's something they really got to clean up. I was saying going into this game, they got to clean it up. And they had an ejection early in the game. That was crazy. Like, what are we doing? Why are you fighting? But that was early. Then we saw some offensive linemen jump off sides, which that's on them. That is on them. And then we saw one illegal format. It was an illegal shift, I want to say. It was two guys who were moving at the same time. One guy has to move, or if they do move at the same time, they got to get set for a certain amount of time before you call the play. So we did see that. But when it comes to running the team, running the operation and all those things, we didn't see none of that. So it's gonna be spooky hours once we get to Monday, because now we got to hear all the Shador detractors. We got to hear them do a heel turn and see it in real time where they got to change and kind of figure out what they're going to say and what are the reasons. Because now – This is what I think. This is going to be speculation. I think they are going to say that the Browns not giving Shador reps is the reason why he produced. I think that's what they're going to say. They're going to say, see, the Browns are doing this the right way. They're slow walking him. They're not overwhelming him. And that's why he produced. And I just got to call that cap. That's going to be straight cap, because if you put a Colorado jersey on Shador and you take that performance he had, you would think it was the same thing. This, to me, this had nothing to do with how the Browns are doing things. I think him starting slow had more to do with how the Browns are doing things than his performance had with how the Browns are doing things. And also, another thing, when they were saying, oh, he couldn't call the plays and he couldn't do this and do that, okay. Now, when it comes to Kenny Pickett, when it comes to Dylan Gabriel, we're going to see, is Kenny Pickett and Dylan Gabriel, are they going to have – Shador didn't have it as a wristband. He had it around his waist with the play sheet. Are they going to have that? We saw Tyler Huntley with the play sheet. Now, is Joe Flacco going to have the play sheet on his wrist? Because if all these guys come out with the play sheet and they have it on either the wrist or they have it like Shador had on his waist, more and more lies are being exposed, y'all. More and more. So let's go over the top plays. To me, Shador first touchdown pass was the top play. Shador scrambling for the first down, that was the top play because I was on third down. The pass he made to Luke Florio, that was one of the top plays. His other two touchdown passes that he made to Davis, I would say those, he had a bunch of top plays. I'm trying to think of who made some plays on defense. To me, I can't remember his number, but he had two sacks. I remember the one specifically on Andy Dalton. But the cornerbacks who were actually playing, I was getting nervous once Bryce Young was able to identify, and sometimes Andy Dalton, when they were able to identify that they had one-on-one coverage on the outside and they were just throwing the ball up, I was like, man, we have to look at what we do in that corner. Because with Martin Emerson out and Greg Newsome already kind of banged up and Denzel Ward, once we go past Greg Newsome and Denzel Ward, our corners, they kind of get exposed. I know it's early, but the problem is we see them from joint practices getting exposed. Number 25 had a great diving interception. Let me remember him. He had a great diving interception. But yeah, those corners, we got to figure out what we're gonna do at corner. If we got to go to, you know, a nickel defense or a dime defense, I'm real nervous about who that slot corner is going to be and who that fourth corner is going to be if we go to dime. So that might be something where teams try to spread us out. I remember a couple of seasons ago, the Browns couldn't stop the run. And it was right before oh, man, am I still here? All right, I'm still recording. Let me do a quick check here. So on my end, it looked like I lost connection on my stream, and then now it's saying my stream is back. So let me do a quick check. So if you're listening to the audio version of this, that is what I'm doing. So I'm just doing a quick audio check to make sure that the sound is still there, because on my end, I kind of lost connection here. So let's see if we still going. All right, so we still good. Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that in a while, but like on my end, it was just showing up like we lost connection. I'm like, dang, what's going on with the connection? Where'd it go? Okay. Man, I forgot where I was at in my train of thought once that happened. That's okay. We'll get back to it. I was talking about the corners. Yeah, the corners, we really got a corner is going to be a weak spot for us. I want to see if they go out and actually add another cornerback to the room. Just because it looks rough. It's going to be spooky once they can identify that we are not in zone or we are in man. It's going to be spooky on the outside. Just forewarning y'all. Just let y'all know about that. What is the next thing I want to cover? Oh, guys who I want to see make the team. So Gage, number 84, Luke Florio, 37. I want to see 84 and 37 make the team. At some point, the Browns have to identify young receivers and stop always having to trade draft capital for established receivers. So Gage, both of them can actually do kick and punt returns. So I think that's useful, because if you're going to be like a fourth and fifth receiver, you got to be able to do special teams. Both of those guys can do kick and punt returns. They were actually doing them. So I want to see those guys get more opportunities, and hopefully they're able to make the team. They've been having great camps. Gage actually has the most catches, most touchdowns in camp. So he's been just balling out. We want to see what we got in Thrash. Thrash had a good preseason, I want to say last year, but you know, we got to see what we have. So I definitely want to see Gage make the team. Defensively, Carson Schlesinger looked like he was moving around. He had some good stops. He looks pretty quick. When we first drafted him, people were saying he was small or an undersized linebacker. I don't know what they were looking at. Carson Schlesinger is not small. When you see him out there on the field, he's not small. You see him standing next to guys. He's not small. So he was pretty fast. Hard to see Mason Graham really make a difference. He didn't get a lot of burn. So, you know, you could attribute that to him just not being able to get into a groove of the game and him just not playing for an extended period of time. But we're going to see what Mason Graham does as things progress and things go forward. Who else is an honorable mention or who did well? We got some tight ends that I wanted to see. Harold Fannin Jr. He was fully dressed, so I thought he was gonna get in there. But we didn't get to see Harold Fannin Jr. I would have liked to see him. We didn't get a chance to. So our third and fourth tight ends, we're gonna see who they're gonna be. It looks like those were the guys that Shador was playing with. They were okay. In a pinch, I think they could be decent. I just don't know if you can rely on them full time. Dylan Sampson, he did get a carry. He got kind of smacked on that first carry. I'm like, dang, he is kind of small, but he took his hit and got right back up. So, also we have a running back, last name Williams. Let me see what his name is, because I think he did pretty well. Let's get the box score. Travion Williams. I like the way he runs the ball. Yeah, Travion Williams, number 36. I like the way he runs the ball. He ran with aggression. He also, listen. He did something that was Nick Chubb-like, where Nick Chubb would always, when we were doing those wide zone plays and you have that, you see the cutback, he would do that cutback, and Nick Chubb made a lot of big runs, a lot of burst runs off of those type of plays, and he actually did that. He did a couple cutback and hit some lanes, and I was like, okay. We might have something. We definitely have to figure out our running back room due to what's going on with Quashawn Jenkins. So he did pretty well. Let's see. Let's get this up on the screen for y'all. Let's go from take down. See, I can see what I'm looking at. Yeah, so the running backs, Dylan Sampson only got those two carries. His first carry was for 5 yards. Oh, that's Kaden Davis, number 89. I couldn't remember his name earlier. Kaden Davis is the one who caught the two touchdown passes from Shador. But I definitely, Tua, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, number 35. He had 5 carries as long as 12 yards. But definitely the running back I want to see get more opportunity is Travion Williams, number 36. I like his jump cuts. I like his patience. I like his running style because he had a combination of running hard and also waiting to see if he can find a cutback lane. So I think when you play like that zone run game where stuff is kind of going wide and then you always have the cutbacks, I think you need a running back who can actually take advantage of that because the cutbacks will be there. And they'll be there when the defense is over-pursuing to the outside. You can just cut back. And, you know, you get one-on-one with you in a corner. You in a safety who had to hold contain on the other side. So I definitely look forward to seeing more of him in his next game. Another thing, just getting back to it. Shador didn't take a lot of sacks, so I thought that was good. Because early on, he did face pressure early. Like really early. Like, it wasn't every play, but it was about 3 plays where I was like, that defender is in the backfield in under 3 seconds. what turnstile is not even trying to block? So he did handle that pretty well. He handled that pretty well. So yeah, let me know what y'all think of the performance. Let me know what do y'all think of the Browns overall performance. I know it's preseason, so winning and losing, that doesn't matter as much to me. The thing I really wanted to see was, were guys going to be overwhelmed? Did guys look out of place like they didn't belong in the NFL? And all this operational stuff that they were saying Shador couldn't do. And I think, you know, all those questions were answered because we got to see a lot of young guys. So, all right, so we might be running into some trouble on my end. It looks like it's trying to reconnect my stream here. So let's see if it gets reconnected. Shout out to Raven76 B More. I wish Shador the best. Potential is there, except when he plays the Ravens. I see y'all having a big season, so shout out to you. We appreciate that. Yeah, I see the Ravens having a big, big season. All right, so hopefully, let me double check and see if we reconnected. This is, I know I had this situation one time previously where it seemed as if my stream was cutting in and out. So I just want to double check and make sure I'm still live. So I got to jump on my phone real quick. Let's see. All right, so this is bad podcasting. Okay, it's reconnected. All right, so we good there. Yeah, that's bad podcasting on me. So if you are listening, if you are listening to this podcast after it release on all platforms, that was bad on me. But I was going through some connectivity issues on my end, and they went back. We got back. We got everything back set. We're good. We're good. Shout out to everybody for being here. Shout out to y'all for waking up and tapping in on this stream with me. So let's see. Let's leave that alone. Leave that alone. All right, there we go. All right, so for everybody, if this is your first time tapping in, I will be doing a listening party for the Browns next preseason game against the Philadelphia Eagles. I also go live on, I usually go live on Saturdays at 10 a.m., but now that we're getting into football season, you will catch me for Browns game. I'll be doing a listening party for every Browns regular season game and also the two remaining preseason games. I'll be doing listening parties. I'll be live on YouTube, Off the Record D. Remember, the is T-H-A, so definitely tap in. We'll be going over how players are doing, what we want to see from guys. We'll be doing it live, and we'll be doing it real time. You'll be able to hear my insights and analysis on guys that I think are doing well. So definitely want to like, comment, and subscribe to get those updates. You can catch me live on YouTube and Twitch. And then you also want to be notified so you know when to tap in. So we are running into another connection issue. Man, this is crazy. I never seen it this many times where it's kind of connecting or reconnecting. So it's kind of strange. But just we have so many technical issues. I don't want to kind of belabor the points here. I want to make sure it's still a good listening experience. So this is Eliminate the Gray with Off the Record D. You can get this anywhere you listen to podcasts, you know, Apple Music, Spotify, Prime. You can catch me there. Also tap in for all the Browns games, for our listening parties. And, just so you are not alone when you're watching these games, we're going to call it here. I think this was another great episode. Shador has the haters sweating. So this is going to be them. That's going to be. That's going to be the Shador haters who are going into this, who wanted to say, they were waiting to say, oh, it's just preseason if he did well. But if he did bad, they were going to be attacking him, saying he's not ready. That's why he dropped to the fifth round, all those things. Shador obviously understands that he has the weight and the pressure on him. He didn't let that bog him down. So he showed up and showed out, and he performed. So I think this was a great episode. So shout out to y'all for being here. Off the Record D, Eliminate the Great Pod. This has been great. I will catch y'all in the next one. Peace.